This is Fred Siegel. I'm talking to Joel Kotkin about his article in the current issue of the City Journal entitled "The Golden State's War on Itself." And Joel, at the heart of this article is a comparison between the two Browns, Pat Brown, who was governor of the state in the 1960s, and Jerry Brown, the once and perhaps future governor of California. Could you explain that?
Well, I think that what's really interesting is almost an Oedipal complex here. Now, you have Pat Brown, who was the ultimate builder, you know, in many ways the American version of a kind of social democratic a figure who basically wanted to invest in the public sector in order to create more wealth in the middle and working classes. Now, obviously, you know, the business people got rich too, but the notion was that this would be a shared prosperity, that as California got wealthier, education would become very affordable, even at the highest levels, and also for the working class kids who might have, you know, basically free tuition to the community colleges, that people would have the ability to go buy a house, that home ownership was no longer for the upper classes. It was a very, very dynamic vision, probably closest to what you might have seen from Harry Truman. In contrast, Jerry Brown really had contempt for much of his father's vision, came out of the notion that we really had too many material goods, which is certainly a problem that is confined to those who were in the upper classes, and felt that we needed to go back to some sort of much more austere form of governance. Now, to be sure, many of the things Jerry Brown wanted to do made sense. I mean, like everything, the Pat Brown regime had become bloated and too bureaucratic. But Jerry forgot or did not attend to as much the idea that you had to have a dynamic private sector. What bailed him out, ultimately, was the fact that the California economy and all the foundations that his father had built and other governors had built were still very strong. And when the economy began to recover in the late 70s, California was a huge beneficiary.
But, you know, you point out that under the father in the 1960s, California was spending more than 20% of its budget on infrastructure. Now it spends 6% of its budget on infrastructure. Similarly, public sector expenditure on public sector employees was fairly limited in the 1960s. Today, it's the single biggest part of the budget and growing rapidly. What is Jerry Brown's relationship to this growth of the public sector?
Well, Jerry, who is a very clever politician, recognized early on that the public employee union would be very much a critical ally and a great political force in California. So he did make it much easier for them to unionize, and then more recently, with his going back and forth many times, but fundamentally Jerry decided that for instance in his current campaign, that he would rely on the public employee union to help finance his campaign. Now, he does not need nearly as much money as a challenger because, you know, he certainly has the name recognition already sewed up. But fundamentally, Jerry Brown is a very complicated figure. He's not a kind of, you know, public sector tool that many Democratic politicians and even some Republican politicians are. He has had a tendency sometimes to be rather tough with public employees. But in his most recent permutation, he doesn't seem to feel that the public sector and the size of the public sector is a fundamental problem. What you don't ever know with Jerry Brown is what he's going to do once he gets power. He is, you know, he can be extraordinarily Machiavellian. And of course, at this stage of his life, he doesn't really have to care one way or the other about, you know, running for president or positioning himself for the future because he's already in his 70s.
He was, as mayor of Oakland, he was sometimes he was surprising. He turned out to be a law and order mayor to a limited extent. Recently, Willie Brown, who second only to Jerry Brown in recent years in California as a political figure, the Speaker of the California Assembly, said something that startled people. First of all, he pointed out that California pension costs have risen 2,500% in the last decade, while state revenues only increased 24%. And Willie Brown said, this is unsustainable. This will produce a terrible future. And recently also, the town of Bell has been in the news. People may be familiar with this. This is the town where it turned out that the city manager of a tiny town was making had a total compensation package of $1.5 million. Joel, what's the political significance and metaphorical significance of this little city of Bell right near L.A.?
Well, I mean, the sad part is, although Bell was an outrageous example, this kind of thing happens in many communities. This is particularly true here in Los Angeles, in what you might call sort of working class, largely Hispanic areas, where there are relatively few voters and where historically the local citizenry has not been that involved. You have very low voter turnout, even for congressional elections and presidential elections in these districts. And so people who can take advantage of these situations do very, very well. And, you know, this is a problem that, although not every place is as absurd as Bell, is really a problem that extends. You know, Bell is maybe exceptional, but in the extent of the largesse, but the pattern is pretty well there. And, you know, I think as Willie Brown points out, this problem is now completely getting out of control. And the worst part is there doesn't seem to be a will in the legislature, and there may not be a will from the next governor to do anything about it. And this is, this is really, sapping the strength of the state. And of course, you're in a feedback loop. You know, you have reports of California having this problem or that problem, and people who may want to invest in the state are saying, well, I don't really want to invest in the state where the schools may close or the roads won't get built. So there's sort of a kind of a failed state kind of a mentality out there, you know, very much like a company thinking of investing today in Greece or Spain in Europe may say, well, you know what, maybe I'll go someplace else where the fiscal situation and the political situation is more stable.
Joel, it used to be that the business community was a counterweight to the public employees. Even as the public employees rose and became a power in the land, they were a counterweight. But it seems as if the business community has faded dramatically. Now, that may change with this election, but why did it fade so dramatically over the last two decades?
It's not by mistake that we have had elections dominated on the Republican side by Silicon Valley executives, because Silicon Valley and to some extent Hollywood are the last two really powerful business interests in the state. And the problem is that to a large extent, these are interests that really do not necessarily need much of what California has to offer. In other words, they increasingly technology companies do much of their work in other states or outside. They only keep their very top people here. Many companies keep their headquarters but export most of their work either overseas or to other states. So the connection between sort of this public sector and a very great public sector that we had in the past and the business community has diminished. And so what you find is that we have much less of a kind of engaged public sector and private sector involvement. And I think that, frankly, there's been a process where people are just, you know, discouraged. And, you know, business interests cut deals maybe for their particular industry or, you know, try to sort of figure out how they could do best on their own. But, you know, groups like the California Chamber of Commerce are amazingly ineffective to make people understand that economic growth is an imperative. And so you get the most amazing situation where you have working class and middle class people, particularly Latinos, voting for politicians who then support policies that basically chase manufacturing, agriculture, warehousing, all the key employers of those very same people out of the state.
I want to bring up one last point, the Central Valley. Really an extraordinary situation in the Central Valley, talking about chasing people out of work. In the Central Valley, 450,000 acres, some of the richest agricultural land in the United States, have gone fallow. The unemployment rate in the Central Valley in some areas reaches 40%. What is this about? What's happened here?
Well, what's essentially happened is, and this is not entirely the fault of the state, but there has been a series of rulings in terms of the water policy that have really made it very, very difficult to get water. This is irrigated land. What is astounding is the lack of concern at the state level on how to turn these things around. And as somebody who I've done quite a bit of work in agricultural areas, farmers feel that the state of California is essentially hostile to them. Now, remember, agriculture, by some counts, is our largest industry. We have the most advanced and sophisticated farming sector probably anywhere on the planet. And we are slowly letting that erode. And there seems to be very, very little concern about how to turn that around. And frankly, the Democrats are completely clueless in general. And many of the Republicans, particularly the current governor, seems fairly clueless too. I mean, if you look at websites from the Department of Agriculture, they are overwhelmingly focused on environmental issues as opposed to business issues. They seem to be less concerned about exporting our product to the rest of the world, which has always been a critical source of revenue. I mean, the whole disconnect between job creation, particularly in the private sector, and public policy runs through absolutely everything in California, and that's why we tend to have a diminishing employment base, even though at the very top level, people still want to live in Santa Barbara, they still want to live in Atherton, they still want to live in San Francisco, they still want to live in Malibu. So you're always going to have that high end of the employment group still concentrated in California, but the working and middle classes of California have been terribly served by the political leadership.
Joel, we're almost at the end here. Arnold Schwarzenegger is about to leave office. Just characterize, if you would, his years as governor.
Well, you know, it's a little bit like the movie that was made about this woman, Sybil. He has so many personalities, so many tendencies. You know, he starts off as, you know, sort of almost like a Chris Christie kind of guy. I'm going to cut, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then, you know, he gets slapped back and he goes and he becomes a mealy mouth. And then he gets the green religion. And at the worst possible time, California adopts draconian climate change legislation far beyond anything that the country is doing, putting California even in more of jeopardy. And, you know, it's almost like Arnold Schwarzenegger is running for the most popular person at a Malibu beach party, as opposed to being governor. So this guy who used his appeal as kind of a tough guy and a self-made man has ended up being perhaps the worst gentry liberal this side of Michael Bloomberg.
Joel, thank you very much. I think this is illuminating, and people who want to follow through on this and see more of what Joel is talking about, they should look at the Golden State's War on Itself and the current issue of the City Journal. And Joel, just briefly tell people about your current book.
Well, my book is about America in 2050. It's called The Next 100 Million, and it really talks about how are we going to live and how are we going to grow in the next 40 years. And again, one thing that's very common between what the piece I did for the Manhattan Institute and the City Journal and the book is that the only way we can accommodate our population and to prevent a descent into a really bifurcated world and in a situation where the middle class dream really is wiped out is to have economic growth. And that should become the focus of government policy, both on the national and on the state level.
This is Fred Siegel thanking Joel Kotkin, author of an article in the current City Journal on California's war on itself. Thank you, Joel.
Thank you.